Right. Hello, everyone. I'll go around and say hi, starting with Paul and Susan, Jim, Bob K, James, Tyler, Jinryu, Sam, Paulette, Marv, Gathel, Shoketsu, Drew, Aaron, Mick, Peter, Alice, John, Katie, Linda, Franklin, and Ruthann. All right. Let's see. What do we have in terms of announcements? I guess the Jukai ceremony is June 27th. We had a in-person residential session on our calendar for August. So let's see. Originally, that was on the calendar for March, but that seemed too soon. So we postponed it till August. But at this point, it seems too soon as well, especially it just seems like it's going to take a while to get everything rolling again. You know, even once things open up and people are vaccinated and stuff, it's just like shifting our mind and like starting to do stuff again. And besides the fact that we usually do this collaboratively with Y-East Zen Center, and Shintai ended up having to be out of town at this time, and Joshin has to work, so like, yeah, it ain't gonna happen. But so what is on the dates that are on the calendar, August 23rd through 28th, we'll do something. It'll be, at the very least, it'll be an online session, full schedule from probably Tuesday morning through Saturday evening, and then we'll have a normal thing on Sunday. So at the very least, it'll be that, and who knows, maybe by that point there will be a few of us in the Zendo and others joining. We'll see. not committing to anything at this point, but Jinryu,
can you say those dates again?
It's August 23rd through 28th.
So it's already on the calendar anyway?
Okay. All right. Any questions or any other things that I should announce? All right. So tonight we have a precept class, and it will be presented by James. Take it away, James, and let me know whatever help you need me to give.
Absolutely. Thank you. Hi. It's good to see everyone. It's been a while for some of you and maybe never for others, so good to see you. So this is my first presentation of a precept class, so it's kind of exciting to do this. We were just talking in the breakout room, and I gave a little bit of my background. I don't know how many people here have met me before, but I've been with Right Way for about a year and a half, maybe getting close to 2 years now, I think, and took Jukai last year and are probably the first socially distanced, fully masked outdoor Jukai ceremony. I've maybe not in any sangha anywhere, but definitely for Right Way. So that was kind of cool, pioneering, you know, first time ever for that. Prior to that, I practiced at No Rank Zendo for just a short time with Rinzai Pachotnik Osho in the Rinzai tradition, doing all the koans. Jinri was mentioning those in our breakout room. Those are fun. I love the koans. But as I was telling them in the breakout room, you know, Rinzai was hard. You know, there's a lot of whacking with the stick and yelling. And I said, okay, I got it. Something a little calmer. I'm gonna go to Soto instead. Yeah. That's kind of a joke, actually. I didn't mind the hitting too much. But and then prior to that, I was with Portland Friends of the Dhamma in the Theravada Thai Forest tradition of Ajahn Chah. So I am actually going to reference an early Buddhist text in my talk tonight. And I know Domio's a big fan of those too. So I think that's a perfect segue here. So the plan, pretty basic. I'm going to just say a few words, and then I've got a few passages to read. I'm going to offer some personal thoughts. Obviously, I know that's part of the point, is to take these precepts and really figure out how does this jive with where I'm at in my life and how I approach things. And then I will like to your question, Domio, I'll probably do some breakout rooms, have maybe just an even number of people in each room, maybe no more than 3 or 4. I don't know how many people we have on, but just to discuss, I'll give you some talking points, and then maybe have it be, we'll see what kind of time we have, and then to leave enough time for everybody to talk in their group and then come back and any insights, of course, you know, keeping it like, oh yeah, John was talking about how he likes, you know, we don't want to go there, of course, but just say if there's anything that you heard in the breakout room that you thought would be beneficial or some way you hadn't thought of the precept in that way, just whatever your takeaways are, and then we'll close for the evening. So that's the plan. Oh, well, I'll stick to the plan. I have no idea. But so when Delmio reached out and asked those of us who had taken Jukai if we wanted to do a precept, I jumped and like immediately. I think I probably replied to the email within 30 seconds of her actually sending it. Maybe that's me just, you know, revisionist history. But the reason I said I really want to do the fourth grade precept, I really want to do the one about truth and disarmacy. And the reason that I really wanted this one is because I knew if I was going to volunteer to do one, this is the one I could really sink my teeth into. And the part of the reason why that is because this is the one I struggle with the most. And I think probably a lot of us have struggle with this one on some level or another, even if we're not like, you know, Donald Trump level liars, you know, and we've told mistruths. I'm sure all of us have. I don't think there's a single person on this call that has never, ever, ever said anything that was not true. And if you have, then leave, because I would actually better yet take over, because I'm not going to have anything close to reasonable to say. it's really basic. And I think part of the reason that it's really easy, and I'm kind of saying, like, you take the idea that the precepts can be looked at on or interpreted on multiple levels, right? There's the really elementary basic level, just like face value, here's what the precept says, do it or not, right? Where they sound more like commandments, you know. But then there's more and more nuanced levels, right? You can get deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper until you get so deep that it's actually impossible to keep the precept. You know, that's what I love about Zen, right? It finally gets to a point where you're like, I can't even, right? So like the Bodhisattva vow is a great example of that, right? Save all sentient beings, really? I'm going to save all sentient beings? So, and I love that actually is a demonstration of how it's not about the goal, you know? It's about the journey. It's like the continuous practice. Like Dogen says, Gyoji, continuous practice. Like it's just, you keep doing it. You just keep sitting zazen, you keep adhering to the precepts. You know, one of my favorite lines from Norman Fisher is, you know, until the bell rings or you drop dead, whichever comes first. You know, so just keep doing it and keep chugging along and just keep trying. And so how that ties to what I'm saying here is, like, even on the most basic elementary level, you know, like the precept about defaming the three treasures. On a daily basis, I don't feel like I struggle with that on a real elementary level. I don't go around like, that Buddha, what a jerk, you know, or any weird, I don't know, that's just a joke. But, you know, on more refined levels, sure, I'm sure I violate that one. And so I need to, you know, keep practicing with that precept. on the more refined levels. But this one, just on a really elementary, basic level, you know, speak truthfully, avoid dishonesty. I'm like, yep. Let's see. Yesterday, I told probably precisely six lies. I mean, it's the one that kind of bites up and grabs us probably as much as a few of the others, if not more than, depending on, you know, your life. So, and I feel like even if you're really trying hard to adhere to it on an elementary and more nuanced level, it's really easy to fail at it, because you can have an intention, like, here's my idea, and I'm going to say these words, but then not communicate it correctly. And so then you know, were you really being truthful, or were you, well, I was truthful to what I meant to say, but it didn't come out the way, you know? So it's just like, it's a real, it's really a road full of potholes. Like, whoops, I didn't mean to, you know, I told him this truth there. I didn't really want to do so. So it's hard. This one's hard, you know? You couple that with the fact that it's highly necessary, right? I mean, we're human beings. This is how we communicate. We communicate through words. I'm sitting here yakking at you right now. Like, it'd be better if I didn't have to, you know, or if we, you know, we hear words, we say words, and we also put this precept in the context of what we write, right? The written word as well. In sending emails, sending text messages, social media. Probably the single most common place where people tell their mistruths is on social media, you know? And so there's so many different opportunities to practice this precept and to fail miserably at it, because we have to use our language, our human language, so much more than, you know, other animals, like you get your bird calls or your grunts or whatever. And okay, you've got a simplistic language, but a lot of it is just, you're kind of feeling, you know, you're feeling the room, right? If you're a white-tailed deer and you're like, wait a minute, you know, I'm feeling something's amiss, you know, there's a predator nearby. But, and we've kind of lost that. I think a lot of humans aren't as in tune with the gut instinct and our, you know, perceptions that don't have to do with language. So it's really become our primary mode of communication, where we, you know, plenty of examples where I didn't really read your facial expression correctly. I didn't read your body language correctly. But the words that you said, oh, yes, I heard those. I understood those. And words have such a reach, right? I mean, actions speak louder than words, sure. But words kind of travel farther and more quickly, I think, in a lot of ways than some of our actions might. You know, case in point, with our past administration in the White House, posting a tweet at 2:00 in the morning, and the next day the whole world's talking about it. You know, and obviously that was an unusual case, because this is an individual who had that platform that none of the rest of us really have. But within the context of our own spheres of influence, how much power do our words have? You know, like, if I say something that's not entirely true in front of my son or my daughter, like, that's got a lot of impact, right? Because now they're learning, you know, especially like, and I think there's an example in the I think it's in the Eshton Rosetto book, you know, saying that the kid is actually 9 when they're really 10 to get them, you know, to get the child's price at the movie theater or wherever, right? I did that once. You know, I was with my son, and this was long ago, and I said, oh yeah, it's not. And my kids were like, no, I'm not, daddy. I'm, you know, so that was me being caught in a lie in front of my kid, you know? So it's really, it's just, it's tough, right? It's really tough. It's important. Sorry, I left my camera with my finger. Saw my finger there. Sorry about that. So that's really why I wanted this precept, because I'm like, ooh, this is the meaty one, right? We got some stuff to talk about with this one. Yeah. So how do we apply this precept to our lives? So I'm going to, let's take a look at the precept itself from our Andy Daniel, 16 Bodhisattva precepts. And the thing that really stuck out, well, I'll read it and then I'll tell you what stuck out with me, but do not speak dishonestly, communicate truthfully. In the realm of the, well, we already said this earlier tonight too, but in the realm of the inexplicable Dharma, putting forth not one word is the precept of not speaking dishonestly. And then I'll read the rest. But that's the part that really stuck me. I'm like, oh, not one word. Oh, how interesting. And Domio herself in, I think it was Zen Studies podcast 165, I don't have the number written down, said, echoed the same thing, that you, the only way you could be completely honest is if you just didn't speak at all, which is why Zazen is perfect precept adherence, right? You're sitting in Zazen, you're not killing anyone, you're not speaking, you're not, you know, you're not lying. I mean, maybe you're, you know, you're getting sideways with your Zazen, maybe you're, you know, cultivating anger, maybe you're dwelling on past mistakes, you know, who knows, but you can really, at least the precepts that really have a lot of impact on others, like you're not doing them in Zazen, you're sitting there in Zazen, right? So, and I know in the Zui Monkey, Dogen talks about this a lot in the third, I can't remember now, but how this is the best way to abide by precepts is to practice Zazen. So keep doing that, you know. So, you know, not speaking a single word, well, that's going to be a little tough. I got the day job, I got the wife and the kids and the family, and what am I going to do? I can't, you know. So, okay, you know, if I'm already, by saying something, I'm misrepresenting the truth. Because I have an idea in my mind, and as soon as I start to say words, there's no way I'm going to say words that truly get to the essence of what I'm really trying to say. As a musician, I know this is a thing that all musicians share. It's like, I've got the stuff here and I gotta get it out. And here's all this music to say basically the same thing. What's in my heart? What's in my heart? And it's never enough. And so they just keep doing it. Just keep writing songs and releasing albums because I can never fully, I can't get it out. I can't express what I'm truly trying to express. So if speaking at all is a misrepresentation of the truth. It's colored by my conditioning. It's colored by your hearing. What do? You know, we have to speak. We have to use language. So why is it that we can't just be honest then? Why do we struggle so much with this? So we're dishonest. And what are the reasons why? So I'd like to, I've got a couple of the readings that I have some ideas. Of course, I could be wrong. You know, if I'm wrong, then call me out. These are just coming from my mental, I don't know what I'm trying to say. Anyway, this is a Mind of Clover, the Robert Aitken book that I know has been used. I can't get it out of the light there. But Robert Aitken's Mind of Clover, excellent book on the precepts. And he says something really awesome here where he says, well, no, I'll just start from the top. So this is right at the top of that, if you've got that book. The Chinese ideographs Wang Yu, in Japanese Mogo, are found in combination in the title of the fourth precept and not commonly elsewhere. Interesting. The etymological meaning is forgetful or neglectful words, deriving from this root meaning the Buddhist and secular dictionaries offer a lie, a deliberate lie, wild statements to tell a lie. That's all in quotes. Nakagawa Son Roshi used to paraphrase Dogen Zenji saying, don't use rootless words. Thus, we are cautioned to be loyal to the essence and not so much be true to others. That passage really resonated with me because it got me thinking, well, yeah, there's a layer of dishonesty where it's not so much about, well, what it's really about is I'm not being true to the essence. Why is that? Well, the essence scares me. The essence worries me. The essence is not what I wanted it to be, you know. So this is I think goes right in alignment with the, especially in Zen, we really focus on reality as it actually is, you know, and not being attached to preferences, as it says in the Sensen Ming, the third Zen patriarch. You know, the great way is not difficult for those not attached to preferences. So this is a good example. Not being attached to preferences would be, here's the essence of the matter. Here's the truth of the matter. I prefer that it was not this way. I wish it was different. And so being true to the essence would be saying, okay, well, I wanted it to be different, but it's not. So here we are. Now, what can I do with this? This is the truth. You know, how can I express this fully? Where we might be tempted in our more dishonest moments to say, well, maybe I can spin this a different way, or maybe I don't really need to get into all of that, or maybe I can set this aside and hope that it's going to change on its own. Or, you know, we come up with all sorts of ways to completely avoid the actual essence, the actual truth of the situation. And in one of his recent talks, Norman Zocchetti Fisher, after Domio, my favorite teacher, I always have to say that when I start quoting Norman Fisher, but Norman Fisher said, you know, he did a whole series of talks on Sandokai recently, which is fabulous, fabulous. I had never thought of Sandokai quite this way, the harmony of sameness and difference. And in one of the talks, my mind was like, because he said, the mind is a delusion-making machine. That's what it does best. It just makes up delusion. And it goes like this. It's the slipperiest snake you ever saw he didn't say that. That's me paraphrasing. But it just will find every way possible to get out of a situation. And so not being true to the essence, as Robert Aitken there says, is really at the heart of it. You know, whatever the situation is, we're lying because we don't want the essence to be the essence. We don't want the reality to be the reality. So if that's the case, then what's the second step? The second step is we lie to ourselves, right? And so Esh and Rosetto has a really good, this is, I know the Thursday night group, I think, is using this book. Fabulous, fabulous book. And she's got something in here that I didn't mark this as clearly as I wanted to. On page 51 of that book, there is an old saying that quote, a person can't dupe others who hasn't duped himself first. Like, that is so infinitely true, right? So step one is I'm deluding myself, or I'm uncomfortable with reality as it actually is. And so now I'm thinking up how I'm going to react to it. And so now I start to delude myself. Now I start to talk myself into all sorts of craziness. And well, but if I say this and I do that and the other thing, then it's going to be, you know, and the one that we, I'm going to use that book again. Why am I putting that away? The excuse that we come up with more than any other is, well, I don't want to hurt their feelings. I don't want to hurt them. I'm not going to tell the truth because then it'll, you know, they'll feel bad and I'll feel bad and it'll ruin the relationship and it'll put a, you know. So that's step three. Now we don't like reality, so we're going to not be true to the essence. This is the, you know, like lightning fast decision making that we go through, our minds go through, right? Like you said, delusion making machines. Good, it's super efficient. Like within a split second, man, it comes up with something great. You know, so we don't want to be true to the essence. So then we delude ourselves. We're like, okay, I'm not going to be true to the essence. So now I got to talk myself into this other version of reality that I'm going to spin out for myself. I'm going to make up this other version because I don't like the one that's here. So now I'm deluding myself. I'm talking myself into that. And now, if it stopped there, okay, you know, not as bad as it could be. I'm still deluding myself. If I lived on a mountainside in China, never spoke to another human being, that'd be awesome. Then, you know, I could do that all day long and it wouldn't hurt anyone. But it's when we speak and we do this. And we use words to then communicate whatever this new version is that we have decided to manufacture, right? And again, this is like split second this stuff happens, right? And we're already saying the lie before we even cognize it. If we even have the ability to cognize it, oh, I'm lying right now. How about that? You know, which is, that's the point of the practice right there, right? It's like, oh, hey, wait, whoa, there's a mistruth coming. Okay, you know, that's when we know we've really got it. If we're able to like catch ourselves before everything that we are going to say or do incorrectly manifests, right? So, and that's when we get to that next one. I know, you know, she says something really excellent in the page 53. Let's see. Misleading, illusory, and deceiving are just a few. And certainly deception is not limited to speech alone. We can deceive with looks, gestures, actions. Nevertheless, from the point of view of this precept, which focuses primarily on speech, we can say that not telling the truth can range from a harmless fib, like I'm just on my way out the door, cutting off the telephone solicitor who calls just as we're about to sit down to dinner, to harmful lives, to deflect blame and suspicion from our own actions. And so that last bit there, I think, really gets to the meat of why we then choose to actually, you know, we don't like reality. And so now we're trying to talk ourselves into an alternate version. But then why do we put it out there and now deceive others now that we've deceived ourselves? Misery loves company, maybe. You know? But I think the bigger issue is we want to protect ourselves. It's what it's all about. We say, oh, well, I'm protecting their feelings. No, you're not. You're protecting yourself from feeling whatever negative feeling is going to result by you telling them the truth and then having them react to it. Like, right? That's, and sure, maybe in some cases it's, you know, we don't want to oblige of omission and whatnot, but ultimately what we're really trying to do is manipulate the situation to our own benefit. Like, that's the encapsulating all of it when it comes to dishonesty. All lies. Yeah. No, those jeans don't make you look bad. Yeah. Oh, sorry, I was late. Traffic was terrible. No, I don't think I took the last cookie. I must have been one of the kids. That's my late weakness. Wasn't me. I didn't take the last cookie. The election was stolen, you know. I mean, there's any number of different phrases out there, but the main purpose of it, the lie, is to make others and ourselves buy into a version of reality that does not actually exist. That's it. And so I know, and most of our struggles with this, it all comes back to that same root cause, ego identity. I have my preferences. I have my way that I think I'm presenting myself in the world and how I want to be perceived in the world. And this situation is out of alignment with that. And so I'm going to try to pull it back to the way that I want it to be by lying about what's actually happening, by lying to myself, and then by lying to others. Three steps to the process. Now, on a personal note, and this is the other reason I really resonate with this precept, is I was full on just a master of deception for quite a while, decades, in fact. Some of you may know I'm a musician, or I even admitted to that. Well, I got the guitar and the trumpet back here. You can't see the trumpet. But I'm a professional musician. I taught music in college. I played in millions of bands and all sorts of albums and movie soundtracks and the whole nine yards. And I came to a realization a number of years ago that it was all a complete facade. 30 years of a professional music career had been a complete fakery, because I had been trying to cultivate an image. I'd been trying to be somebody who I really wasn't. I have a cool hair, which then of course had to change every 6 months to keep up with the, oh, well, now this other styles and fashion, I'm gonna do that instead. Or, you know, this hairstyle is not quite doing it for me, so I'm gonna change hairstyles and maybe that will do it for me instead. And I had the clothes. I used to dress up to go to work in vests, ties, the whole nine yards, man. I was looking slick. We had a business casual dress policy. I didn't have to wear a tie. You know, so many people, man, I hate this business attire. It's like, I hate putting on a tie every day. I wish we'd go casual. And here I had it, and I was going the other way, dressing up. You know, because I had hair, and I was doing all the skin care routines and the whole nine yards. And meanwhile, in my professional musical career, I was just always, I was a leader of a big band, actually, for about 12 years, like the Rat Pack style big band, Sinatra and Dean Martin, the whole nine yards. And we really tried to cultivate that whole Rat Pack supper club. We were a regular fixture at Tony Starlight's supper club when it was still over on the east side of town. And I noticed that, and this was all in retrospect, unfortunately, but I noticed that over the years that it went from being like this really fun kind of community effort, 20 people in the band that really loved to play and everybody was just this camaraderie, and it became, by the end of it, the James M. Gregg Show. It was all about me, you know. and how cool could I look? How fun could I make the show? How much could I put myself in the spotlight? I was giving myself more starring roles than some of the other band members. And you know, everything back in 2015, it kind of just blew up for a variety of reasons, but it didn't take me long to say, oh my God, I've been faking it this whole time. I've been trying to be somebody who I wasn't. And not only lying just by presentation, because the true reality of who I was had nothing to do with the fancy clothes and the charming, you know, charisma and the whole nine yards. It wasn't like, that wasn't really me. Like I, deep inside, I didn't feel like I was that person. And that's why I had to keep it up and keep changing it and keep making it. And it started to spin out of control. And I was, you know, spending more and more money on the clothes and the hair and the whole thing, because it was never enough. It was never enough. And so then it all blew up. And it was great because then I was able to actually start coming back to the essence of who I really was. And so, of course, I went completely the other direction. Here I am in a black t-shirt. I shaved my head, you know, so the clothes and the hair at least went completely, you know, south. But yeah, kind of silly. But it was all a lie. Not only a lie of presentation, but a lie of actual telling lies, you know. Lying to my family, lying to my friends, lying to people in the group about just to try to, you know, twist reality to meet what I really needed it to be or what I thought I really needed it to be. So what would be better in situations like that? And that's probably a fairly extreme version, you know. No, you don't look fat in those jeans is far, far less impactful a lie than just cultivating a whole personality that doesn't even exist. But so I, you know, if you saw my talk a couple of months ago, I love the practical, like, give me something easy to remember that I can take out there in the real world with me and interact with others. And I'll go back to one of the early Buddhist texts for this one. This is in the Majjhima Nikaya, in the Pali Canon, the Abhaya Sutta. Prince Abhaya, and there's a whole prelude story to why the Buddha gives this teaching. And I'll recite the Pali Canon is hard to get through sometimes textually. Then, so he's speaking to Prince Abhaya, and he says, "Whatever speech the Buddha," I'll edit. It says Tathagata. Whatever speech the Tathagata knows to be not fact, not true, not connected with the goal, and that is not liked by others, disagreeable to them, that speech he does not utter. Whatever speech a Buddha knows to be fact, true, but not connected with the goal, and not liked by others, disagreeable to them, neither does the Buddha utter that speech. And whatever speech the Tathagata knows to be fact, true, connected with the goal, but not liked by others, disagreeable to them, the Tathagata is aware of the right time for explaining that speech. And then it goes on and on. And that's very, very confusing. But there's a really easy way to distill that. And it's actually a three-step formula that starts with number one, is it true? And if you can pass that one, you have to be able to pass that one. Is it true? And like really true. You know, like I have to, yeah, it's true. Oh, well, actually, I'm kind of just trying to, you know, engineer my own version of this. Is it true? And then if it is true, then the second one is it beneficial? So it can be true, but not necessarily be beneficial, right? It is absolutely true that this person is a worthless pig, and I'm going to tell them they're a worthless pig. Is that beneficial? No. Oh, okay. And then the third step. And so you have to pass the first one, right? It has to be true. Then it has to be beneficial. Then the third step is it timely? Right? So is it true that this person's father was a really greedy, jerky son of a whatever? Yeah, that was true. Would it be beneficial to tell this person that their father was actually a really awful person? Yeah, it could be beneficial to them if they, you know, have this other belief, and, you know, if they knew the truth, then they would be able to make different choices or whatever, right? So yeah, I can say it's beneficial to tell this person how awful their father was. Their father died last week and today's the funeral and we're at the funeral. Is it timely? So, oh, nope, not timely. Okay, well, so it's true and beneficial, but it wouldn't be the right time to say it. So now I'm going to wait, right? And I love this formula because if you can truly apply it in the moment, it really, like, silence will become your modus operandi because there's so many times that we go to say, hey, oh, wait, that's not true. And you got to pass the first one too. You can't say, well, it's a lie, but it would be beneficial and it is timely. Like, no, that doesn't work that way, right? The first one's got to come first. It's got to be true. And so I know the whole is it beneficial, is it timely, is actually covered in some of the later precepts. I don't want to step on anybody's toes who's going to talk about those. But I love that truth is the first step in any speech. Is it actually true? And then and only then can you get to whether it's actually a good thing to say and is it the right time to say it. So that's all I got. It's about 8:40. So let's do what? I'm trying to think now what would be best. I'd like to break into groups. What do we have as far as 24 participants? I don't know, what if we did like 8 groups of 3 or something like that? Can we do that? I don't know if it allows for that.
Yep. Let's see. Recreate. And let's see. 7 rooms would be 3 to 4 people per room. If we do 8 rooms, then there might be 2 people in a room. So
okay, yeah,
I'll do a 7.
Okay, and so what I would like you to do is just each person have an opportunity to have an opportunity. Let me emphasize opportunity to say something. Doesn't mean you have to say something. If nothing comes to mind, of course, silence is golden. But We could take about 2 minutes apiece. If you had 3 or 2 people, yeah, it'd be good, right? It'd be about 6 to 10 minutes or something. And I, you know, obviously don't hold each other like, okay, your time's up. I don't know if we have a time constraint that would put us in that position, but so I just to think about and maybe communicate, where do you feel like you let your speech run astray of the precept? Now, obviously everybody who's here has had some thoughts around the precept, and obviously you don't have to get into the, you know, I lie to my kids all the time about the fact that I'm their father, you know, like something really crazy, like you don't have to, oh wait, that's probably could have saved that one. But where do you feel like you let your speech run astray of the precept, and how do you think using that 3-step formula, is it true, is it beneficial, is it timely, could impact the way that you interact? And again, if you're like, then you can pass or whatever. And everything said is confidential, et cetera, like we always have. When we come back, let's say, if we did 2-3 minutes, it's maybe come back in 6 minutes, 7 minutes. I don't know if we program the Zoom rooms to do that. And then any thoughts that came out of your group discussion that you would like to share, we'll have time to share. Sound good? Do I like the plan? Coolio. All right, let's do this. Well, back. So to wrap it up, I would just like to see if anybody have any comments for the group or anything, any takeaways or any thoughts on how you practice with this precept that you think would be a benefit to everyone. I guess you can unmute yourself, right? You got that locked down, so go ahead.
So I maybe see things a little bit differently. I guess I don't see the truth as being this binary true or false. I guess I embrace ambiguity, as I was explaining with in our breakout room. This discussion reminded me of Star Wars and The Empire Strikes Back, and Luke finds out that Darth Vader is his father. And later on, Obi-Wan is telling Luke, and he says, you know, the truth depends on our own point of view. And I think Obi-Wan was pushing it a little bit by saying that Darth Vader betrayed and murdered his father. I think the point is valid, that you can't really separate fact from perspective. And maybe that's kind of what I see the precept is getting at, that, you know, speaking one word, that as soon as you speak, you bring your own perspective into the conversation.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I'm just going to jump in because I kind of mentioned something like that too, because I think it's really interesting, because like we have to talk and we have to share. Like, that's the only way we're going to exchange anything. And like, it's such an interesting like contradiction, because like Drew was saying, like, what can you say that is true? When I say anything, like, there's some sort of underlying assumption of truth, and I need to share that. And like, I don't know that, and I don't presume to know that, but, you know, like, we have to talk if we're going to figure something out. I don't know. I think that's such a neat contradiction to kind of like kick around. I don't know.
One thing that our group talked about was the reflection of whether your speech or unspeech is for the self or not. To reflect on whether what you're saying is to, you know, make your ego boosted or protected. You know, reflection upon that is important.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Anyone else?
I guess I had a question that I brought up, and I wasn't sure, I'm relatively new to this, but could you argue that the idea of skillful means is just another way of, could that be used as a way of lying? To say, when we talk about skillful means, is this not sort of like not giving someone a version of the truth? I don't know. I mean that honestly. And so I meant this near the end, is that we kind of lie, we lie to children constantly, right? Like we lie about, Santa, the Easter Bunny. You know, I grew up in the camping industry, and the whole fun of that place was around lying to children about stuff that's going on. I really enjoy, but it's a different kind of lie. I think there's a purpose behind it, but I don't know how to, like, yeah, I feel like there's an area where like this lying is completely acceptable because it feels harmless, or we've decided it's harmless. And it's in a different space, but for some reason that's what I thought of. But the idea of like, is skillful means a way of not telling the truth, or is that, am I totally off on that one? And that's an honest question.
Yeah, you know, something that occurs to me, and that when I hear you say that, I think you're onto something. And I think Upaya can, you know, maybe not a, like a bold face lie necessarily, or maybe one, I don't know. But and I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name. Is that Alice? Or said, you know, I like the idea that, is it for your own ego or not, right? Is it for the benefit of others or not? And one story that I loved is, I forgot who told it, but when he was in San Francisco, Suzuki Roshi, would just, you know, people were all in the like 70s or the early 70s are like all into Zen, you know, but then they were conflating it with the hippies and the psychedelics and the whole thing. And people would come to Suzuki Roshi like, man, I was sitting in meditation and I had just dropped some acid and I had this totally great vision and the blah, 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 blah. And they would tell him this, like, you know, and he's sitting there, the Zen master, he's like, that's not, but he would say to them, how interesting. And then he would leave. And was that a lie? He didn't, I don't know, think he really found it interesting in the way that we would probably say. And, you know, and inside he's probably like, well, you know, in point of fact, what you just described is complete bullshit. You need to, you know, whatever he would have thought about that. So is that dishonest, or was there some upaya there? Was there some skillful means or some skillful way of handling it? So that story popped into my mind when I heard you asking that question. So yeah, and I like what Drew said too. Is it binary? It's not really binary, right? Is it? There's not just fact and fiction. There's fact as colored by the person expressing the fact, as colored by the person hearing the fact, as colored by everybody's experiences and the context of the situation. And, you know, like, yeah, is it true that I, you know, drank myself into a silly stupor and laid down in the middle of the road when I was in college and was doing kung fu in the middle of traffic? Yeah, that's true. Do I need to tell my 11-year-old kid that? You know, so lie of omission, like, no. I mean, there's skillful means to your point, right? And you lie to children. Well, you know, am I glossing the truth? Am I outright telling Santa Claus is real, honey? You know, like, what's the end goal? I like that side of what you're asking, and what I think Alice alluded to. Like, what's the purpose? What's the end goal of what I'm saying? And for me, it's just the mindfulness around it. Like, you're asking the question. You're running through the mental process. You know, that's it. To me, that's a lot of the adherence of the precept is the attempt. You know, and I could be completely wrong about that. Don't be sitting there going, "Oh my God, it doesn't really work." But you know, the attempt to be truthful, maybe more than, well, was I actually truthful in that moment when I said that thing?
Yeah, so I think it's true, the quote Drew wrote, nothing exists except atoms and empty space. Everything else is opinion. But like, as Mick was saying, we do have to communicate, you know, and how do we communicate? We communicate through language. But I think it's important. I think Alice was mentioning this and Tyler, that, you know, I mean, when we open our mouths to speak, is it going to be something that's beneficial in some way? Or is it just garbled verbiage? Or is it from the ego? You know, I mean, if you're checking in with yourself before you open your mouth to check that, I think that's a good practice. And I think a lot of people do say things that are just really coming straight from the ego. So if people are actually doing that, checking in and saying, where is this coming from? Is this coming from a place of self-promotion, or is this coming from a place of truly wanting to share my ideas and maybe help someone? I think it's there's a whole different intention with those two ideas.
Drew said something in the chat, I don't know if that went to everybody or not, but about how the truth reported is partially contingent on the desired outcome. And that made me think of, you know, the truth. I can utter the complete and absolute truth. You know, I can run through that three step. Is it true? Is it beneficial? Is it timely? And it's like, here it is. Here's the truth. But there's a degree to which the truth is also partly dependent on the person hearing it. Are they ready to hear it? Is it something that they believe is true? Even though it's true, that doesn't mean that it's going to be accepted, right? And so, you know, they could say, well, you're lying, when in fact I know I'm not, you know. And so how does that come to bear? You know, do they know that I'm telling the truth, but they just are trying to fool themselves, right? They're doing the same thing. They're going through the same three, you know, I'm not being true to the essence, I'm not being true to myself, and I'm not being true to others. It's a two-way street. You're right.
Right. 9 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Thank you, James. Yeah, and thank you everyone for being here and participating. We offer the merit of this Sangha meeting to all so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, James.
Nice job, James. That was great.
Thanks, James.
Really enjoyed it.
James, I particularly liked the idea that dishonest speech is trying to manipulate the situation for your benefit. That, like, because there's many subtle ways you could do that, you don't even have to tell a lie. Just the way that you express yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. And for me, even it's just even up here, like, how am I even perceiving the situation? Am I twisting it to my own benefit, right? That's the catalyst. I start there, and then I start the proliferation, and then I say, yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. Delusion-making machine.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.